Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Do you know how to find the right oil for your car? Now you can find out quickly and easily online, thanks to Castrol's Rego to Oil tool. Simply type in your Rego, select your state, and within seconds you'll know the best Castrol products to unlock the edge of performance in your car. So what's your car best suited to? Just search Rego, the number 2, and oil, and find out.
A Motorsport Podcast Network production.
G'day there, it's Aaron Noonan here. Great to have you with me again for another edition of the V8 Sleuth podcast powered by Repco. Now, last week we had part one of our chat with John Bow, so this week it's time for part two. Before we get to that, don't forget every Tuesday, the Castrol Motorsport News podcast with Andrew Van Leeuwen and Stefan Bartholomaeus, the boys bring you the latest in Australian and international motorsport news, notes and quotes. It's a must listen. Subscribe to it now so you don't miss an episode. Now to this week's chat on the V8 Sleuth podcast with John Bow. So in part two, we talk about a bunch of stuff. In fact, we covered a lot of ground. We talk about his time at Brad Jones Racing, including the time that he and Brad gambled on tyres and took a 1-2 at the Australian Grand Prix. We talk about what it was like finishing second to Greg Murphy's Lap of the Gods, which, let's just say, JB's not that thrilled with. We talk about his massive shunt at Pukekohe in New Zealand in 2006 when the throttle jammed on his Team BOC Falcon. He talks too about a change he'd like to make to the Touring Car Masters technical regulations, and he'll tackle your National Motor Racing Museum couch racer questions as well. Here we go. Buckle up. Time to start part two of John Bow on the V8 Sleuth podcast powered by Repco. Now, we talked in that one a fair bit of DJR era, which obviously is pretty obvious territory for any chat with you about that great decade that you had with DJ. We talked a bit about Cat and the Briggs and how all that deal happened and how it all didn't happen in the end. But we didn't really get on to, we ran out of time, Brad Jones Racing, your time with Kim and Brad.
Yeah.
So I thought we might be able to dive a bit into that in this episode.
Okay.
So 2002, they expand to two cars. You've had your Briggs
experience
deal end.
Yep.
You join up with Bradley and you're there for, I think, the next, what, 5 or so years, 02 yeah. to 06.
Yeah.
One of the ones that our fans have messaged about, do you remember the day at the Grand Prix that you and Bradley went 1-2?
Oh, absolutely.
Clearly. That was like,
clearly, you always remember the things you won.
Yeah, hang on, who won that one out of you two?
I won.
I thought you'd remember that. I thought you'd remember. So this was the day that it was wet. Yeah. And you blokes went, nah, let's go slicks.
Yeah, yeah. The how it all came about, first of all, to drive for BJR, which is now quite a
huge place. There's 40-odd people there.
Yeah, huge organisation, but it wasn't a big organisation then. But it came about through Howard Marsden, who was Ford Racing manager at the time, and he put it together. Brad wanted to expand to two cars. I knew Brad and Kim since they were, you know, Kimmy was skinny and
and Bradley had hair.
Brad had a mullet.
Oh, I've got photos of that too.
So I knew them well, and you know, we're both country people, so we always got on good. And Howard said you can either drive.
I think we did. It was there or Keys Wheels place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yep. And Phil Curtis, who had been my mechanic at DJ in a period and had come over to Cat in Western Australia when it was there, he goes, I think we should go to BJR. So, you know, I've accused Dick of being taking the path of least resistance, but I do it too. You know, so I go, okay, whatever you reckon.
Let's go.
Whatever you reckon. So off we go. Phil moved to Albury with his young family who are now grown up. And funny, you know, I saw him Eastern Creek, our first round of Touring Car Masters this year. He was there with a guy, a young kid, in a Toyota 86. So he's still in motorsport, still helping, still doing these. He's a good operator, you know. He's a really good operator. So he came to Brad's and he, you know, he's a fairly forthright, stubborn Kiwi, you know, and he knocked the place into shape quite quickly. And so, you know, it was good. It was a good period of time. We had a good time together. We were reasonably competitive at times, you know. I think, in you know, looking back in hindsight, at the era we probably we were running in 2005 and 6 the same basic cars we were using in 2002, so we didn't evolve.
And that's where the results started to
fade away a bit, yeah. And but it was, you know, good time, good fun, you know. Brad's Brad. He's a unique critter.
Well.
And both of them are still my friends. So, you know, if you race with somebody and they're still your friends 20 years later or 15 years later, they were okay.
Mm.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people that I race with that I'm not friends with.
and we haven't got time to go through the list.
And there's quite a lot that I am still friends with, you see. So as long as they don't torture too hard, you can stay friends with them, yeah.
You guys were mega competitive at Bathurst. I think on the last pod we talked about 02, that AU that was
fantastic
really
car. Lit.
That was really fast, that car. There was the literal 30-cent bit that had the drama.
Mm.
But I wanted to quickly talk about 03. Mm-hmm. So it's the black. Remember that there was the white and the black Aussie male car. So Brad was the white, you were the black.
The black one always looked better, I reckon. Black and green.
Black and green or white and green. And so much so that I think there's been a car or two over the years later on down the line where the owners have gone, well, my car was actually the white one, but I like the black livery better. I'm going to paint it black anyway.
Yeah, so I met a guy at Phillip Island, you know, only a few weeks ago that's got the white one.
One of those cars.
Well, I said, what are you going to paint it, white or black? Oh, I think black because it looks better black.
Well, I totally agree.
Yeah, totally agree. Anyway.
So this is the weekend of Greg Murphy setting this lap of the gods time that blew everyone away. You had nailed, like, your best lap. You are P1, everyone's jaws on the ground, and you are forgotten from history for that.
I'm glad you haven't got a camera. You'd see me almost dry reaching. anyway, the lap of the gods, eh?
Couldn't believe it.
So you journalistic people who created that.
Could have been the lap of the bearded one.
Yeah, it could have been, yeah.
But
I mean, the engine did the work.
Tell them all.
Just saying. Yeah, the engine did the work. I mean, you know, obviously, Greg Murphy's a very, very good driver, obviously. But, you know, in that particular case, the engine did the work. You know, it was like looking at it, watching. If you watch the footage now and you watch the footage of mine, his was on the rev limiter like 200 metres where mine wasn't on the rev limiter at all. So that's the engine. There is a difference between engines and engines.
And
it was an engine. But, it, you know, it got this great lap of the gods thing. I wonder who made that up. Was it plastic?
It's a good question, actually.
Every time someone brings it up, it annoys me.
Okay, so I've annoyed you now. I'm going to say some nice things now to get you back on side with me.
Look, I don't think anyone that's listening to this, don't think I'm bitter.
Much.
No, I'm not.
So, 03, so that's the year that you and Stevie Richards got together late in the race. I think you ended up in the sand out in turn one. The next year you and Bradley finished on the podium, you were third.
Yeah.
So you were always in the game when you two got together in that period at Bathurst. Yeah. And then that next 05, 06 year,
we had lots
you didn't
of trouble.
Keep up.
No,
you
no,
couldn't
we
quite
didn't.
Keep up. The stones were really strong.
Triple
Eight were getting stronger.
Yeah.
And it got harder and harder for BJR.
Developmentally, we stood still, but it was a small team in hindsight.
Mm.
And, you know, it is what it is. You have your moments. I mean, you've got to admire Triple Eight that are there every year. I mean, they realigned the whole thing, didn't they? You know, once they got their mojo going, you know, they every year they're there. They've won all these championships. When they've lost, they've only just lost.
They didn't finish 10th. They were still second.
Anyway, we had good times and we had bad times, which is pretty normal for motorsport. But Brad and I, first of all, he loved Bathurst as a driver. Still does, yeah. Loved it. And he always drove out of his skin at Bathurst, you know. So when I look back on it, running the team and driving would be very difficult. Mm. Yeah, and that's what he was doing at the time. So, yeah, we always, you know, he was a superstar at Bathurst.
I reckon he's probably underrated. In
he's now a superstar of business.
Just ask him. Just ask
well,
him.
No, but he's survived. Oh, hey, he's,
I was going to say, Crompton calls him the nuclear cockroach that just keeps on keeping on through a nuclear disaster. There will be Bradley. He will survive.
He'll pop out of the wreckage.
Ta-da, here I am. By the way, I've got a race car. Do you want to put a sticker on it?
I talk to him regularly, and his enthusiasm for the game still is
hasn't changed.
So easy to see and hear, you know. You got to absolutely give him his credit. I'd love young Heimgartner, who I rate quite highly, to get some results for him. Mm. You know, so I mean, they do get results. They do get results, but you know, to be the level of DJR now, post Penske and 888 is very hard job, you know. So whether they've got the wherewithal to do that, I don't know. But it'd be great to see it. Really, really great to see it. Because he's a good bloke.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. I spoke with him earlier in the year. If you haven't heard that podcast, there's a two-parter with Bradley from the start of the year when I went for a little drivey drive.
Oh, okay. Up to Aubrey Town. Did you? Yeah, he wouldn't come to you.
No.
Unless you paid for the petrol.
Yeah, well, I was going to say petrol prices were a little nicer at the start of the year compared to where we're at now.
I had a story. I've got a story.
A Bradley story?
Oh, yeah, it's a
do we have to bleep anything?
No, here? No, oh, no, it's okay. Just a funny story. One particular year, I can't remember what it was, 2005 maybe, I called him and I said, how about, can I, instead of me staying in the motel, how about...
Where's this at?
Bathurst.
Right, for the event.
For the Bathurst 1000. How about I get a motorhome and I'll stay in the pits, you know, like... And
which now is common.
Common, everyone, yes, but it wasn't then. I had this period where I thought I wanted to be a motorhomer. Anyway, he goes, no, can't do that. Too expensive. No, you'll stay where you normally stay, which his dad had booked for 25 years. You had to back into the toilet because it was so small, the room. Anyway, later he rings me. He goes, I've decided that you can have that motorhome. I go, gee, that's nice. Brad, thanks. He said, you'll have to pay half of it. And I go, oh, okay. Can we get a decent one though? You know, and I forget what it was. I think it was a Swagman or something. It's nice.
You know. There's a punchline coming here.
So I thought, oh, God, he's a good bloke. Anyway, I get there and I said, what did you do with the room that I was going to have? He said, oh, I needed that for someone else. That's the only reason he let me have the motorhome. It was nothing to do with being a good bloke.
He just punted you for the room.
He just punted me because he needed the room. I think he might have needed it for John Clewen or somebody.
It was for a John.
Whatever. It's just normal, though. I thought it was funny.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I tell you what wasn't funny. The day at Pookie when your throttle jammed.
Oh, no, that wasn't funny.
Poor Scotty Wensley, the photographer who was...
Yeah.
Normally there to capture accidents became part of it.
He was in the accident.
He broke
his
leg, I think.
Yeah, he did.
The way that the fence post.
Yeah.
Is that – when you think of – I mean, we talked Phillip Island in 96. That one's a common one, the rollover and the shunt with Lowndes. But is that kind of the shunts you had in your V8 era one that people probably forget about?
I think they probably forget about it, yeah. Yeah. It was a big crash. It was like – even in the Phillip Island, which was a multiple rollover, which has never been captured on film.
And we still haven't found the bike.
Still never found it, no. It's, I never ever thought I was going to die in it, but the one at Pukekohe, as just before I hit the sleepers, that was what it hit. It was a fence made out of sleepers. Mm. Just before I hit it, I thought, this is going to kill me.
This was real serious.
Yeah, it really, truly. It's funny how your brain works. oddly. So there's part of the air box, which is carbon, had guides sort of glued inside it to channel air to the trumpets. Part of it had broken off and wedged in the linkages, unbeknownst to me. So we're going down the straight at Pookie, past the pits, was flat out in fifth gear, so on the limiter. So it would have been 245, 250K.
Quick enough.
So fast enough, yeah. And you'd have a little break, like a good firm but not long break, and turn into turn one in fifth gear still. So it was quite a quick corner. I've come off the throttle to put my foot on the brake and the throttle's jammed because the carbon had gone into the linkages and jammed it open.
And wasn't this a byproduct because we had reverse grid races
going?
Yes, it was. So there was always the nose to tail with the fast
cars into the end of the back straight.
And so you had a bit of damage at the front and that's what had sort of caused that, and then off you went.
So I've clutched it and stood on the brake pedal because I was on the brake pedal anyway. Mm. And Crompton's in the commentary. He's heard this thing on the rev limiter because I've clutched it. And within about a millisecond, it's hit the fence.
Mm.
And when they checked the data later, I've pushed the brake pedal twice as hard as you can actually physically do it. So
when you really got to stop.
If I sat in the car and stood on the brake pedal as hard as I could, well, I made twice the pressure prior to that accident. So it's like you get this superhuman save your life thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's just amazing. Anyway, so great big impact. Car hits the fence. Poor Scotty was behind there taking pictures with his long lens, and the sleepers, as they would, because they're made out of wood, splinter, and part of the sleeper goes through his leg and breaks his tibia. Yeah. I think, or fibula, yeah. I'm not sure which is which.
Leg.
So he was in hospital for a few weeks. I called him regularly because I know him, of course. And the car's come to rest and I've shaken my head like you do sometimes to get your eyeballs to stop spinning. And I've thrown the door open and jumped out and I've forgot to unhook the radio. So the cord, the stretchy cord, has pulled me back in. So as everybody's watching, John Russell was there then at BJR. John Russell thought that I'd broken something. So he started running down towards the accident.
And, but it was just you with your
and
radio.
Then he's tripped over, nearly broken his leg. And anyway.
Calamity.
Yeah, calamity. But I was actually okay, so I'm very lucky, you know. I mean, I think if you're a fatalist, when your time's up, your time's up. But it was a big crash.
Scotty's leg repaired. He still shoots at supercar races. I saw him at Sydney Motorsport Park a few weeks ago. So if anyone's wondering what happened to Scotty the photographer,
he's still in the business.
Still around the game.
And so am I.
He's still there.
Hopefully so.
Why did you leave Brad's at the end of 06? We've talked before about how you could have gone maybe with Larry for next year and you ended up with Paul Cruikshank.
Yeah.
Was it just time to leave or was Andrew coming through?
Yeah, Andrew was coming through. The reason I left DJR really was because there's two reasons. One, Stevie J was in the background and I've always rated him highly as a driver and I thought he needed the opportunity. And unfortunately he didn't get it that year, got it a year later. But and Andy was the same. You know, Andy had won the
development
division two or whatever you call it. I thought he deserved a chance, and I had this opportunity with Paul Cruikshank, who I'd known for a very long time. You know, he was my mechanic on the first year of the Sierras, and he'd been to UK, worked for Dick Bennett's and what on, you know, so he had a lot of experience. The car wasn't that great, but you don't know, you know, as you get older, you don't know whether it's the car or yourself, you know. So anyway, that's what I did. I chose to go there, and it wasn't a good year because, first of all, we didn't go that well competitively. And I was really, like, I had my mental issues then, you know, which was serious, serious depression. So it wasn't something I look back on with fondness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that I look back on. A lot of my motor racing life with fondness, but that period of time I don't, you know. And it's you know, like anyone that suffers from depression knows what it's like. It's dreadful.
Totally. Yeah. And was that a case then that it was time to stop supercar, or, you know, full-time V8 supercars? You still raced lots of stuff since and after that because of what was going on away from the track, or was it a case of, it's time anyway?
I thought, you know, when people start calling you veteran and all that stuff, you know, and it's, I don't know, if you're sensitive, and I am a bit sensitive, I suppose, about stuff like that, I think, oh, well, maybe it's time to stop it. So I did. Mm. I did. I was still doing some racing with, you know, in GT and still doing – well, I got into Touring Car Masters by sort of accident, but with the help of several people, and I actually really enjoyed it because the cars are, you know, raw.
Mm.
Yeah, and you know, the latter part of my supercar life, you spend half your life analysing data and talking to engineers that don't actually –
it becomes less about driving cars, which is kind of why you started doing it.
Yeah, and I just trying to find a tenth here and a tenth there, and being told how to drive by a guy that's never driven. And, you know, I mean, I know you've got to have it and you can't undo science and, you know, modern thinking, but this was early days of all that. And, you know, I mean, when I drove for Dick, we never looked at the data ever. I mean, we had
– who's buying dinner?
Yeah, that's right. It was like, you know, come on. He'd be out the back of the garage blowing the horn. Come on, let's go. We've got to go and have dinner. So, yeah, I think I just wore myself out a bit, you know, to be honest. I'd been in it since, like, 86. So it was 2007. It's quite a long time.
Yeah.
And totally. And I honestly, since then, I've loved most of the racing I've done, you know, the Touring Car Masters particularly, because I've said this many times, the cars have got 8-inch wheels. They've got little wheels. Mm. They've got supercar-style horsepower. They've got 4 gears, no aero, none, 0.
Oh.
I know, you know, so they're fun.
Yeah.
And they got little brakes, 305 mil rotors. That's pretty small.
We don't want you having too good a gear.
No, but
we want cars sliding, we want cars passing.
I've recommended this to the ARG people. I don't know whether they'll act on it somewhere along the line, but that we go to the tyres that they use in Group N, which are a Hoosier cross ply with a very fine tread, but they slide way more, and they allow you to slide way more. The ones we use are radials. They're only 8-inch wide, but they're radials. And sliding them is not conducive to good lap time, even though you can't help it sometimes. But, so I figure, and a lot of people – I know TCM is full of politics, like most motorsport, but this is probably the most political category I've ever raced in. But a lot of people like it because, you know,
fan favorite.
They grow up with Taranas or Mustangs, or they all want to own a Mustang. I've never met anybody that doesn't want to own a Mustang.
It's probably a few Holden listeners who might disagree.
I don't know.
I reckon if you put one under their nose, it's pretty good.
Give me $100, you can have it. Very few would sell it. So, you know, GT Falcons, now we've got Stevie J and his XD, you know, which is a colour tribute to his dad's one, much more, you know, scientific. Mm. It's a very clever car. And we've got Marcus Cicanovic, who's a, you know, terrific driver and has probably never had recognition like he should have had, you know. And, you know, other guys like George Medecki's in and out, is a really good driver. So, you know, it's just, and I think probably my favourite other than Stevie J is Ryan Hansford, because I was friends with his dad, and he looks like his dad, he drives like his dad, he sounds like his dad.
Yeah.
He's his
walks
dad. You know, he walks the walk and talks the talk. He's a great bloke, but a hard ass driver, but not an idiot. You know, so I enjoy it because there's no, my dad used to say, no sheep stations, you know. Yeah. I mean, whether you win or you lose, it's not going to make a difference to your life. Yeah. It's not like you get any prize money. People may be surprised to hear that. What do you get if you win six Touring Car Masters championships?
Six trophies.
That's exactly.
Yeah.
And spend a lot of money.
Yeah.
Spend a lot of money. You pay to play, which is one of the few sports in the world you pay to play.
Yeah.
But it is what we do.
Everyone knows the deal when they sign up.
We love it all, and that's what it is.
I tell you, one of the things we do love, though, too, we love memorabilia. We love collectibles. We love all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's a little way to give it a little plug to the motorsporttrader.com who keep motor racing memories alive. They've got a bunch of stuff online to sell. There's race suits. There's body panels. Some of your old ones.
It's not your business,
Not mine, but they're one of our partners here on the podcast.
Okay.
Wheels, memorabilia, panels, suits, they've got a bit of everything. Have a look at their website, themotorsporttrader.com, which links me to something that I want to talk to you about.
Yeah.
I've noticed lately on Facebook you doing a little bit of a series lately of you with some of your old trophies and telling some of the stories behind them. Is this a case where you've got that many trophies and you've got Facebook content for years?
Yeah.
Or have you just gone, you know what? I've forgotten I've got here. Let's have a look.
Unlike George Washington, I cannot tell a lie. This is the idea. The guy that looks after my Facebook, Shane, is a friend of way back. It was his idea.
It's all his fault.
I'm surprised by the interest. So I'm standing up on the couch last night taking a picture of another trophy. I'm really touched by the interest because I had this bright light moment a few months ago. I'm driving along Beach Road, which is not far from here, and I'm thinking, what's going to happen when I die? A very dark, morbid thought.
It's a long way off. It's a long, long way off.
What's going to happen to all those trophies?
And there's a lot of trophies from your 1,000-plus race career.
Yeah, I gave a lot of them. All the Vescander ones I gave to Bernie. Some of the Prancing Horse and Maranello ones I gave to them. I just left them, but I've still got a lot.
Mm.
I've got boxes of them. I've got shelves full of them. I've got.
It's interesting. A lot of drivers, some teams have different deals where the team gets the trophy, not the driver. Did you ever have that situation? It was yours.
Well, I'd never ask. I just put it in the bag and went home. I've always been one to ask for forgiveness, not permission. I think when I go for Dick, they used to put a garland around your neck in that Shell series quite often. I used to give them a garland.
How many times was he here? Tom Smith here from Shell, Ross Brody here from Shell to present the winner's garland.
Yeah.
And for you being a Shell bloke was sweet, but for Brock with Mobil or for anyone else, Larry with Castrol, oil sponsor, straight off to lift it up and get it out of the way because that wasn't their sponsor.
Covered up their sponsors. I think that was done on purpose. Anyway, it was, so I've thought about it a bit lately and I haven't never thought about it before this year really, to be honest. So I think maybe I should sell them. I mean, would anyone buy them?
Oh, yeah.
You reckon?
I reckon V8 Sleuth could assist you there.
Yeah, okay.
Have you found any that you thought, oh, wow, how cool is that? I forgot I had that. Or
I've got one. Backstory? I found one last night and it's quite recent. It's when Peter Edwards, whose car it was and drove as well, Mick Asalo, Lounsey and me won the 12-hour race in the Ferrari, the 458. And it was sent by – it came from Maranello. It came from factory.
Wow.
And it's got – presented to John Bow or something or other, and at the bottom it's got from the Museum of Enzo Ferrari in Modena.
That's cool.
And it's like carbon fiber, and
it's a cool trophy.
Some of these other things, I tell you,
a bit hokey.
Well, you see a trophy now. The ones I got some trophies at Bathurst last end of last year. From ARG, and I got a trophy at Sydney Motorsport Park recently for TCM. a third place trophy, I've got to say. But the
it's Bathurst, better than nothing.
The Bathurst one was actually a round win and a series win. So, and they're really good trophies. Like they look like trophies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas some of the ones that you used to get, they look very shoddy. But you know, I don't know. I just wonder because my kids. I love them to death, but they're not interested in motorsport.
The gene hasn't passed on.
No. And probably because I didn't encourage it. Mm. They're all academically clever. Mm. And I wouldn't want them to go to the tip, these trophies, but I also, you know, I don't know. Maybe I need you to come around and have a coffee one day and have a look.
We can ponder.
You have a look.
We can ponder. We'll ponder come up this. With a plan. We'll come up with a
yeah,
strategy.
Yeah, do that, please. Yeah.
We'll do that. Happy to help.
Because I've still got boxes of them and I've never unpacked.
Oh, you got no idea what you've got.
No, I haven't. No.
It'll be a long coffee, mate.
There's some I've, you know, in my office, I've got some there on display and, you know, the ones that, I don't know what happened. They must have come out of the first box. And there's a few, anyway, whatever.
We'll have a dick. I'm
glad I've got them, honestly, because, I mean, my racing life has been, when I stop to think about it, which is not that often, but I'm thinking about it now because I'm talking to you, I stop to think about it. I think, how lucky have I been, you know? I've raced cars essentially all my adult life.
What year was your first actual race?
71.
And we're in 2022. Mm. So we're into your 55. Yeah,
first, yeah. 51st I don't tell anybody that much because then it makes people go, Jesus, is he's old? And I hate that.
You've never done a driver profile date of birth listing in your life, have you?
I have, but I didn't do it enough. I should have wound it back way more. Way more. David Siegel used to tell me I should have wound it back further.
Who was the DJRPR guy?
Yeah, he was, yeah.
He
may dispute this, but I got him the job. Because he was the editor of Auto Action at one stage, you know, which is where I met him. Mm. Yeah, no, he's a good bloke. We still chat sometimes. Yeah.
He's managed a lot of drivers in more recent times. Yeah, yeah. I spent time working with Will Davison and Jack LeBrock and Lowndes.
Oh, Lowndes for a long time. I should have got him to manage me, really, but I was always unwilling to pay the 15%, you know. I was too mean. But he would have probably got me more money, you know.
Well, I was going to say, spend a bit to get a bit more.
Yeah, negotiating your own deals is not easy.
No, that's you're still here, so it must have worked out okay.
I guess so.
A lot of our listeners would like to know, how are you travelling health-wise? Because obviously early last year there was the news about the prostate cancer, and this is a little – I want to do a little reminder to blokes out there, get your bits checked. Get on the work, blood tests, all that PSA testing.
PSA test,
on
easy.
Give us the quick take. So those who might not have known the story or know how it came to be and how simple it can be to keep an eye on too, and of course how you're tracking at the moment.
Yeah, no, I am okay. Last week I got a PSA. I get a PSA every 6 months. I then have a meeting with Peter Mack, you know, cancer place, and it was only yesterday or Monday that I had a meeting with a oncologist, that's what they call them.
Yep.
And my PSA is good.
Which is a level reading.
Level reading, yeah.
And you want low.
Yeah. All they do is you get a referral from your doctor to get a PSA test or a blood test. While you're getting the blood test, you might as well get it done for everything else because they can do lots of – it's like you take your car to a BMW service agent and they plug a computer into it. The blood test is the same. They can tell you if your heart's buggered or your lungs are buggered or whatever. Yeah. They do
while we're at it, let's look at
full service. And that's how I found it, to be honest. Because of the racing, I get more medical checks than – I probably normally would.
For licences?
Well, not that. No. Just because I don't want to deteriorate
possible.
Any more than I've already deteriorated, you know. And, I'm fine. My level's good and I get another one in 6 months' time. So far, so good. One of my friends, which I feel guilty saying this because he was my friend and I haven't seen him for years, John Trimble, just passed away from prostate cancer. Yeah. So if you let it go too far, you're in deep trouble.
Mm.
But if you get a blood test, it takes about 30 seconds at pathology, you know, Dorovich or whoever.
Any of the joints.
Any of the joints. It's all on your Medicare thing. Mm. So
not going to cost you.
Cost you nothing. And they They'll give you a result within 3 or 4 days, and, you know, if you're up high, they'll probably send you back and do another one, and then they start checking, and you do various tests. But, I mean, it saves you, saved my life, no question, and it's only fortune that I had it done. So, you know, if you don't do it and you, and the prostate cancer gets good hold of you or can get outside your prostate, you can end up, you know, as Frank Gardner used to say, under the grass.
And it should be told too that if it does get out a little bit, or it's manageable and it can, you know, people who tend to have it for a long time and can still live a long, long time. So
they can, yeah.
For people who might not have known someone with it, gone through it, been connected to it, been exposed to it, I just thought, while we want to see air tracking, but also it's a little reminder to everyone who's listening to our pod. I know we've got a lot of, you know, a lot of men, and a lot of men in the age bracket that hits in it. And even, you know, I'm 40, but
you got
to
start
whether
now.
You're in your 30s or 40s.
40 is
go and get on it. Get on it.
It's definitely once you turn 40.
Don't think it's a 50 or 60 thing.
No, it's not.
Get on it early, because if you can get on it early, you'll whip it and you'll be sweet.
Since I've had this and had the treatment and whatever, I honestly have had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people contact me through social media or telephone or email or whatever, asking about it, whatever. I always try and call them back and tell them what I had. I can only speak for myself, but there's lots of different options you have, you know, for treatment. And, so you got to do it. You got to do it.
Get on it. Get on it. Absolutely.
Australian Muscle Car Magazine is one of the most respected voices in motoring media. There's been over 140 issues and thousands of stories published in the last 22 years, from the amazing muscle car machines of the past to the present and the stars that steered and built them. AMC has something for everyone. Delve into the heritage of homegrown high performance now at musclecarmag.com.au.
National Motor Racing Museum, Mount Panorama. You've driven past it many times at the bottom of Conrad Strait.
Been in there a number of times over the years,
and some of your cars would have been too. They're open every day of the week except Tuesday. Don't go on Tuesdays because the doors won't open.
I'm not likely to be there on a Tuesday.
Well, I'm just telling you. All of our listeners as well. Don't go there on Tuesday. They're not there. They won't be able to get you in the door. But they've got some really great stuff there. They're great friends of ours here on the podcast, and they bring you our Couch Racer Questions section, where basically fans send us messages on social.
Isn't it a fantastic place, though?
Oh, it's
ace. Museum. It's cool. Awesome.
I love wandering in there, because in recent years there's lots of stuff coming and lots of stuff going. For a while there it was a bit stagnant. And
the guy that runs it, and his name is
Brad Owen, is the guy.
Is a terrific bloke. He's so enthusiastic. He knows his stuff.
I think I've said this on the pod before. So Brad is the coordinator of the museum for the Bathurst Regional Council. And he got the job because his brother spotted a story that we wrote saying, hey, there's a job at Bathurst to run the museum. This would be a dream job for someone. And told him about it.
And he got the job.
Hey, he's been in Bathurst for a couple of years. Yeah, so there you go.
He's certainly turned it up.
Turned it up. Turned absolutely. It up, Now, National Motor Racing Museum, Couch Racer questions, JB. We got lots. We couldn't get to them all, but we'll do our best to work our way through a few. So Elliot Beaton on Facebook asks about how you've had a steer of a Peter Jackson, Glen Seaton Sierra. With all the years you spent driving Dick Shell cars, how did you find driving another Sierra from a rival team that you didn't drive in the period?
Okay. I've actually, to fully flesh this answer, I've driven the last DJR Sierra, which Terry
Lawler had.
Is
now in New Zealand.
I drove it at the Adelaide Motorsport Festival about 3 years ago, and it was, I thought, wow, how good's this? I did a demo. It had a modern day engine management.
Makes life easier.
And it had modern tyres.
Makes life way easier.
And I thought, wow, wish they'd have been like this. We would have won everything by 3 laps. The one that I drove recently, which was Glenn's last car, so it was a 92 car, was very much like, I remember Dick's car. It still had the period engine management system, which had massive turbo lag, like massive. I couldn't believe, you know, I mean, the guy that's got it, it's beautiful. It's like mint. but it is like it was. Mm. It's not modernized or anything. And the guy who owns it, like, came up to the door like a puppy with a...
What do you think?
What do you think? And I said, it's how I remember them, yeah. I didn't know what to say. So bloody hell.
Very nice way to
put it. It was so much lag. I mean, it's...
One, two, yeah. Three. There's some power now.
There it goes. And when it goes like a, you know...
Have you driven any other Sierra?
Yes, I drove... The ANZ Eggenberger car was owned by a guy in Sydney who's an enthusiastic finder of, you know, historic touring cars, and he's had quite a lot. And I can't remember his name.
Robert Ingram.
That's him. Mm. Yeah, well done. Mm. He had the ANZ car, the Eggenberger car, for a while, and I drove it for a story for Unique Cars magazine. About 5 years ago, that was much easier to drive than the DJR cars because it had less lag, and I suspect it, you know, it was a different spec. Eggenberger's stuff was higher static compression, less boost. Dick's cars were low compression, lots of boost. Mm. So made more power at the top end but more lag at the bottom end. So yep. So that was a very nice car, though, that car. I would have liked to have had a race in that, but he didn't offer.
Oh, just come on now. You've had enough races. No, you've got enough to do. Another question here from Renchi83. This is like Instagram
handles, by the way.
Yeah. How did driving the EB, EL era touring cars of the 90s compare to the BA Falcon onwards in the 2000s?
They had less downforce in those early days. So in reality, they were much the same, but the later cars were a bit more stable. When you say downforce, it's not like it's glued to the road or anything, but a little more stable. In fact, I think the AU was more stable than the BA. That's my opinion. The AU had a bigger rear wing and, you know, it was just more stable through particularly places like Bathurst, you know, where you're over up and down and all over the place. I have very fond memories of the EB, EF, EL thing because it was my time with DJR and, you know, I had a good time there. I mean, I've said 100,000 times I should have probably stayed there but I didn't. So, and we're still friends. I mean, you know, I drove down to Phillip Island the other day specifically to see Young Jet race.
His grandson. So,
you know, I'm friends with the family. I hope I'll always be friends with the family. So, yeah, I've got very fond memories of those cars, particularly the EF, because when that came about, you know, it was sort of a – I thought it was – the guy that did that car as a Ford project was a guy called Greg Harbert, who was an engineer with Ford. And he went to the Hercules – wind tunnel in the States, which is not a moving floor, so it was pretty basic wind tunnel, but did quite a lot of work on it. It was a really good car. So I've said a lot of times, and I still say, you go well as a racing driver when you've got a good car and a good team, and if you've got a bad car and a bad team, you go crappy. So that's the way it is.
It's a very simple formula.
It is, isn't it? Really? Yeah, it is. Find the right people and the right car and you go well.
Yep, find some good ingredients, cook it right.
Absolutely, yep. True.
Alan Marks on Facebook, how is the evolution of driving the Ferrari GT cars over the years? Remember the 355 Challenge that you drove for Ross Parr in the 90s? You had the Nations Cup 360 Challenges with, and then the GT with Prancing Horse, and then, of course, the 458 that you've talked about with the 12-hour with Lowndes and Mikasano and the like.
I did a few races
did a lot
in
of Ferrari-ing there.
I did there, yeah. I was a pin-up boy for Ferrari.
Oh, there's a 430 in there too, I think I forgot as well.
430 and also a 4... I did a few races in the 488 as well, but not many. I did a couple of races. They just got more downforce. Mm. As they got more downforce and more downforce and more downforce and more downforce.
And they're still red.
And they're still getting more downforce, you know. Like, I mean, there's the last weekend, the new Audi, an evolution of the Audi. You know, there's been about
more downforce.
10 evolutions of
more
it.
More planes, more things,
more bits and bobs.
Yep.
And,
yep.
Anybody that knows me thinks knows that I'm not a fan of too much downforce. But in the day,
when
it came along, I thought it was fantastic. I thought, wow, how good is this?
It's funny, that, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, but I think it ruins the racing to a large degree. But watching Formula One's interesting now. I mean, I'll probably get boring again, but it's interesting because they've got ground effects, which is what my Formula Atlantic car had, and so you've got to run stiff springs, and stiff springs don't like slow corners, you know. So it's quite interesting, and GT cars run stiff springs too.
Yeah.
So on the quick stuff, they're amazing, but it's you know, too much, I think, anyway. But yeah, the 355 was basically a road car, and the 360 was a bit more of a race car, and so on and so on. Until now, I mean, there's an Evo 488, and I believe Ferrari about to do another GT car, because GT3 around the world is huge.
Mm.
It's huge.
Massive.
But it's expensive. So
massively,
it's,
yeah,
it
adds up.
So it's for people that have got a lot of money, which unfortunately is not me.
Mm. But you have driven all those Ferraris.
I have, That's pretty cool. I've driven.
And you won a Sandown 500 in one that a lot of people forget?
Yeah, I've won a few races in the GTs for sure. But and I loved it. I wouldn't mind, you know. I was talking to my friend the other day, Greg Creek.
Not many people would say that. My friend Greg Creek.
No. That's why I said it. I'm on my own there, I think. I think he's friends with
that'll
Roland.
That'll get back.
I think he's friends with Roland and Paul Morris and me. So that's three.
Oh, well,
three he's got.
That's
oh, and that's, and Gary Rogers.
Oh, four. He's flying. Next question.
Yeah.
Gavin Neeson from Facebook. What do you like and what do you dislike about Gen 3 supercars?
I honestly can't say because I'm not party to it all.
Do you like the concept of where we're going, Camaro Mustang?
Well, I feel it has no relevance. You know,
what would have relevance?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
we don't have much to be relevant to with what we're driving on the roads anymore.
We don't, do we? No.
Do we need
relevance?
I was about to say, interesting topic. Let's have a quick chat.
I don't know.
Are we at the point where the line between sport and entertainment is now we're going to decide that we're more entertainment than sport?
I think that's true. Yeah, I think that's true. So there's old schoolers that don't like it because, you know, they know that the cars are not a Camaro or not a Mustang. And there's the rest of people that watch on TV or go to the track and watch the racing, which is good racing. You know, it's very high level. It's very – the standard of driving is the highest it's ever been through the field, no question. So it depends which side of the fence you're on. I mean, I think what they're doing is good. But is it relevant? It's not relevant. So it's obviously got to be for entertainment only. And the fact that they're going to look a bit more like a proper car, I think, is good, because you'll still get people that want to be a Ford person or a GM person. So you'll get a certain amount of fans that go. I'm not close enough to it, Aaron, to really make a comment. I could ask Brad, who's very close to it, because he's going to have to run them.
Yeah, for sure.
Whether it's going to save a lot of money, I mean, the engine money it'll save will be a little bit, but it's not going to be millions. It's an expensive category.
There's not many things that are actually cheap motor racing.
No, there's not.
It's all comparative.
It is comparative, and it's very high level, but it would be, you know, high level if they were simpler cars, still be high level.
They'd find a way to
they would,
spend
yeah.
money, make them complex.
Let's look at this Formula One. You cannot stop clever people inventing clever things, you know, and unfortunately that's a fact of life, yeah.
Yeah. Saren Thatch is a regular listener. How difficult was the 95 Touring Car Championship for you and Dick when there was the tyre drama because, of course, the Kobe earthquake had flattened the factory? How desperate did it get for you, like, scrabbling for tyres to just race, let alone win anything or let alone win a championship that year?
Yeah, it was, you know, obviously one of my sayings, it was meant to be. No question it was meant to be. And really I have to give full credit to the Dunlop people and Jeff Moorhead in particular, who was motorsport manager at Dunlop at the time. And it was when the it was a free tyre category then, so we had other manufacturers and things, and it was really interesting. I can understand why it's gone to a control tyre, but it was as a driver, it was interesting because she did tyre testing and they came up with new things, and you know it was great. Well, Jeff Moorhead with his you know his company leaders and the Japanese who made the tyres and the English who had also a factory at Birmingham, they all saved the day basically. They dug the moulds for the tyres out of the rubble.
It's unbelievable.
It is, isn't it, really, when you think about it. We just thought, oh, so they should. But, you know, nowadays I look back and...
So they should. So I've got a championship
exactly.
to win. Sort yourself out.
We've got races to do, mate. You know, but they dug them out. They flew them to Birmingham. And they made tyres in Birmingham using the same recipe. And the funny thing about it was they weren't the same. The tyres weren't the same.
In the way they reacted.
Yeah, the way they...
Despite being the same mould.
Same everything. Same construction, same recipe. You know, there's a recipe for tyres. Mm. Same layout.
Splash of this and a splash of that.
Yeah, and the way the cords are wound and all that stuff. I don't know.
You're getting very, very theatrical with the hands in the back of the microphone.
Yeah,
it's like Italian John Bowes.
I know. I can't.
The Ferrari driver is back.
I can't describe it. Anyway, they weren't the same, but, you know, it was fantastic. They sent engineers from England out, you know, to help us. It was just an amazing effort, to be honest. And us as DJR, Larry... and I think Russell was there by then. Was he or not?
No, it was just. I think Gardner and the other Dunlop team.
And Crompo were there. Yeah, so we were the recipients of all this R&D. It wasn't just for us, but yeah, it was fantastic. And you know, some tracks, it was interesting because some tracks, the Bridgestone were better, some tracks, Dunlop were better, some tracks, Yokohama were better. And I think even Toyo snuck in there somewhere.
Oh, Bondi had run them in the Sierra era. Oh, no, Hoosier, remember? Hoosier
Max.
For a brief period.
I think Max had Hoosier, didn't he? Max Dumpsy.
I think Cricky had Dumpsy. A crack at him too.
Did he? Okay. One period. And I think Mal Rose might have had Goodyear or something. I'm not sure. But anyway.
They ran them in the Amps car.
Oh,
series.
Did they? Okay.
Yeah, yep. Yep.
I should have known that you'd know.
Good memory. I like this. I like it.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, I have to give full credit to. We had a good car, we had a good team. And at the end of the day, Dunlop provided enough
they
for
went
us.
Above
to,
and beyond
they went above and beyond
tires,
anything I've ever seen.
Mm. It was really impressive.
Yeah.
Racing viewer on Twitter. This interesting one. One of the few categories that he doesn't recall you ever having a drive in was super touring. Were you interested? Were you ever offered a drive? Or have you even driven one since they had no longer been a period category?
Good question. No, I haven't driven one. I wouldn't mind.
Anyone out there with the super tourer?
There's a heap of them in New Zealand.
Yeah, they're huge.
And they became so sophisticated.
They started real simple.
Yes, they did.
And then by the end of 10 years, they were rocket ships.
When I went to New Zealand to drive the Volvo, there was some, you know, late model super touring there. There's one that was built. It was a Mondeo built by ProDrive, so it was one of the last of them. And you lifted the bonnet, there was no engine. It was like hung underneath the car somehow. It was like, you know, like engineering at its
get that
finest.
Weight
get that weight back and down. It was sort of like under the firewall. It was just, you know, where's the engine? It outspent itself, to be honest. But early on, Ross Palmer bought two Mondeos from Andy Rouse, and Ross wanted me to drive one and asked me to, and Neil Lowe by then was working for Ross and I was driving his Ferrari. But there was a big anti-super touring amongst the supercar teams, like so Dick and Larry and Freddie Gibson and all those. They hated them. Because they thought
it was going to be a rival to
them. Yeah, they felt threatened, I'm sure. And so I chose not to do it because I thought, you know, I liked being part of DJR and I liked you know, Dick was a friend, and I also knew how difficult he could be if you did the wrong thing, you know. So I thought I'd give this a miss. And unfortunately, I said to Ross, you know, you should get – I can't really do it because, you know, Dick's going to be anti. And so it's not like me to give up a paying job, but anyway, I did. And I said, you should get Greg Hansford to drive it. And unfortunately, you know, it was his first race meeting, you know, so very sad, very sad. I was there driving Mazda in the production race, and, yeah, it was very sad. And, you know, I think fondly of him, as I do think fondly of his son.
I don't think you're the only one. I think a lot of people do.
Yeah, it's
an amazing career. And
he was
two wheels and four wheels as well. And by all reports, a ripper there. I'll tell you, if you haven't read a copy of Neil Crompton's book, I won't give the story away.
Okay.
Get a copy of it.
Yeah.
We've got them available in our online bookshop, just so you know.
Okay.
And our listeners know.
Yeah.
There's a very good Greg Hansford story that Crompo tells in the book. I won't ruin it, but you got to buy a copy, have a read.
I drove with him in the 12-hour race, and I drove with him a few other times, you know, in the Mazda, because he was a favourite of Alan Horsley's, and he's just a great guy, good driver, and just a great bloke. So cruisy. He was flat out getting him to the track in time, and apparently, the guys from Peter's Motorsport tell me that Ryan's the same. You know, you got to go in and wake him up, and pull him out of bed, otherwise he'd never get there.
No other super touring opportunities along the way. No, when there was the split between the two races, there wasn't a.
Yes, there was. Oh, yes,
yes, I like these stories.
Yes, there was. Yes,
what was there?
There was an offer to drive the Renault.
What?
Yeah,
Jay Boone.
No, I didn't do it.
Williams Renault wanted you to drive at Bathurst.
Yeah. Well, who did the deal?
Graham Moore.
Graham Moore. Yeah, Graham Moore wanted me to drive, and I was going to get paid for it, and I didn't. Same deal. Same reason.
And AJ ended up doing it.
Yeah. Same reason.
And did you not do it because you thought it was too hard politically? Because for the same reason.
Not that I didn't want to. I did want to.
That was the British Touring Car Championship winning car of
and
that
I'd
year.
I'd got to know what's his name that raced it, Alan Menu, and he was a super bloke. So I was really keen to do it, but I thought it's going to, you know, it's just going to make my life miserable.
How far did it?
It went along quite well. Yeah, we agreed on the terms and money and everything. I just pulled the pin on it. Yeah, oh, well, I know.
Well, there's something I didn't know.
Yeah, no one knows much.
Oh, I like that.
Not many people know that. Oh. I didn't, I didn't publicise it for obvious reasons. I should have done. Probably I could have.
Could have driven your price up.
I could have driven my price up, maybe. Yeah.
Well, Bradley never called to drive an Audi.
No, he didn't. Oh. No, he didn't. Who drove with him?
Frank Beeler.
And
who was a British touring car.
Yeah, of course. So. And Paul Morris drove with him, didn't he?
The next year. He drove next the second year. Car with Radisich.
Okay. No, Bradley didn't.
He's still got one of those cars. We could convince him to put them back together.
I know.
Take for a burn.
The price would be going through the roof. And Kimmy would be rubbing their hands together.
Totally.
You could sell it overseas.
They're not silly. A couple more questions to go before we finish off.
Yeah.
Shane Jenkins on Facebook. I asked this one not knowing if there's a story, and this could go anywhere. Mm. He says, do you remember Tractor from the Brad Jones Racing days? If so, do you have a memorable story about him? I don't know who Tractor is. Who's Tractor? Have you got a memorable story about it that we won't get sued for?
He was the truckie, and the truckie generally does the tyres. So he was the tyre guy.
Right.
Yeah, Tractor. And they called him Tractor because he was a truck driver. And, you know, truck people call trucks tractors, I think. I don't know.
They're trucks, not tractors.
I've seen him since. I mean, he's a
do they call tractors trucks or?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not a truck person, but he was there for a number of years. Very upbeat character, you know, good fellow. I haven't got any weird stories to tell about him. Brad might have, but, you know.
Drivers are their own breed.
He's a great bloke, and I've seen him since, you know.
Do you know his name?
No.
We'll find out his name.
Yeah, try and
find it. There's so many people in motorsport you meet, you know the nickname.
Yeah.
And you never know their actual name.
Yeah.
We'll find out.
You're a good sparker of memories, you know, because.
I'm just reminding you how you lost yourself a Williams Renault deal.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
I'm now dark on myself for that. Anyway, as it turned out, I mean.
25 years ago this year.
It is 25 years, isn't it?
I feel like Tammy Danny Stubbs. I'm not sure if that's Tammy and Danny Stubbs or the one name. I'm sorry if I've got that wrong. But if it's two of you, I think it might be a joint Facebook account.
Okay.
Did you knock back the chance – oh, geez, well, we're talking about knockbacks. Here we go. to drive an SBR Falcon at a ride day in the mid-2000s? Would Ross and Jimmy have maybe said, oh, come and have a drive?
I can't remember.
Well, they supplied engines to Bradley's team there for a while.
They did so later. I wonder if there was a – late in the piece that I was there. I honestly can't recall. I mean, Bradley's offered me to have a drive of a car of the future and whatever many times.
Why haven't you?
In case I liked it. In case I liked it. And what if I liked it, I'd go, I shouldn't have stopped doing that.
Might have a go.
And if I didn't like it or I was too slow, then I'd be dark on myself as well. So, you know, I just didn't.
No win scenario.
Yeah, no win. Yeah. I like driving other cars because I just enjoy it. And I like the challenge of new things. But, you know, in supercars main series, you're measured in tiny increments, you know. Mm. So I don't really want to do that. With my TCM car, I never look at data or anything. You know, we've got a V-Box on it, which we use for filming footage. Mm. And there's a guy that comes along as he's one of the volunteers, Radio Phil we call him, but he's gone past radios now. He does data and everything. But he's
multifaceted,
Phil. He is. He's actually quite skilled, you know, for an older bloke. And, you know, I might ask him what the top speed is or something, but that's about it.
And then it's like, what time's dinner and where are we going?
Yeah, that's right. I don't – who's making my sandwiches? I don't worry about it too much, you know, because it's a – data and data analysis and engineering has gone through the roof. Mm. The engineering, even in, say, Stevie J's car, is magnificent.
It's next level from the TCM.
It is really, cars. But it doesn't seem to be any faster than, say, Marcus's car, which is a TCM-style car. But, you know, supercars, it's all about a tenth. You know, you're losing a tenth here to this guy. And I haven't got any – no one in TCM drives the same car.
So there's nothing to compare
to. So, no, like every Torana is different.
Yeah.
Every Falcon's different. Every Mustang's different.
Mm. That's cool though. That's a good part, but
there's no sense in looking at data.
No, I could look at compare and contrast.
If I look at data from, say, Marcus's car, I go, all right, okay, you're faster down the straight.
Means nothing to me.
What am I going to do about that? Nothing.
You need to hold that pedal like you did at Pukekohe a bit harder all the way through the
firewall. Push it through the floor. So, you know, it is what it is, isn't it?
It is. And I'll tell you what it's been. It's been a great chat. Thank you, JB, for coming in. We kicked off this whole podcast back in 2019. You were Ep 1. As I said at the start, I think we're up to Ep 189, 190 with our two-parter chat because we've had that much chat we could make two parts out of it. So, I think we've – you know what? We still haven't covered all of the ground of your career. So that leads me to one last little question.
If I'm still around then in another 200.
You'll be fine. We go through them quick now. We'll be up to 400, 300 before you know it. could one day there be a John Bow book? We've done some books in our time. We're doing some more books this year. Would you be up for it one day for us to do a John Bow book?
Well, I'd like to. I've started three times.
And not finished?
Not finished, yeah, three times. So
you add up the three starts, there's probably a whole book there.
The first one was with Johnny Evans,
the late
Johnny Evans.
What action do we sadly miss?
Terrific bloke, who got sick. Mm. Then Marcel, who did PR for
David Siegel,
Paul Cruikshank. Yeah, worked for David Siegel. Yeah, who I still in touch with, you know. And we just never finished. I don't know where the material went.
Don't know where the tapes
and the last
are,
one
the
was. Scotty Newman, who has done a lot of stuff, which if you guys would be interested, I would like to do it because people say – I've asked a few times on social media, should I do it? And I don't know what he got, but we did a lot of stuff in COVID because we had nothing to do. So he'd come round to my place, we'd have a coffee and we'd chat away for hours and hours. But whether it's actually book material, I don't know. And he's changed his job now and he's, you know, busy and he's got a baby and, you know, I think – probably him and I need someone of your quality to get it get done.
So we're going to have a coffee about trophies. We're going to have a coffee about books.
Get it done. Yeah, get it done.
All right. I've got a feeling that we've got listeners who would be up for this. They would be all over this.
If you'd like, if I could probably get some people that support me to, you know, sponsor type wise to help it or something if you like. But, I need to have some proper timelines
We'll give you some deadlines and you've got to hear them.
That's
a good. All right, well, there's a positive way to round it off.
I'd like to do it.
You're up for it. Let's find a way to do it in the next little while.
I've got grandchildren. I'd like them to, when I'm not here, I'd like them to say, gee, Poppy was a bit of a goer, wasn't he, in his day? And that's not about the girls.
I thought you meant driving. But, yeah, right, okay.
No, I did.
That's a good note to end on. JB, thank you for coming in and sitting down with me and going through some
stuff. Thank you, mate. I'm very in awe of what you do. I think it's fantastic because there's not many people of your generation that, in fact, there's none that have your knowledge. So there you go. That's a compliment.
I'll take that. And a massive thank you to John Bow for spending some time here at V8 Sleuth headquarters and going down memory lane with us again. It was great to have our first guest back for, well, this is episode 191. We're getting closer to our all-important 200th podcast, which probably begs the question, who would you like to hear on episode 200? Send us a note through socials. Get in touch via our website. We'd love to hear your suggestions. Head to the website too, bookshop.v8sleuth.com.au. Pick up a great book from our range. Hey, if there's a birthday present you need to buy for someone, get in early for Father's Day maybe. Our Holden Racing Team Cars History Book is with the printer now. We expect copies to arrive in June or July, so make sure you don't miss out. It is a limited edition numbered copy. Follow us on socials, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff. And don't forget every Tuesday, the Castrol Motorsport News Podcast. Every Thursday, Repco Supercars Weekly. And of course, every Wednesday, it is the V8 Sleuth Podcast powered by Repco. Next week, I've got another guest. Well, John Bow's pretty well known for his time with 18. There's another guy who's known for his time with 18 too. He runs Team 18. My guest next week is Charlie Schwerkopf. I'll chat to you then with that chat next Wednesday. Do you know how to find the right oil for your car? Now you can find out quickly and easily online, thanks to Castrol's Rego to Oil tool. Simply type in your Rego, select your state, and within seconds you'll know the best Castrol products to unlock the edge of performance in your car. So what's your car best suited to? Just search Rego, the number 2, and oil, and find out.